Perhaps. Mikhail shifts on his horse. He's clearly uncomfortable with the way Cardan is speaking. Carelessly. As though they are merely having a friendly conversation, and Orla hasn't come to chisel away his power. To weaken his rule. And if she knew Matic was gone, she might attack outright. Looking at her. Looking at Nikasia's sneer, and the Selkies and Merfolk's strange wet eyes. I feel powerless. I have given up command of Cardan. And for it, I have his vow of marriage. But without anyone's knowing, it seems less and less as though it ever happened. I am here to demand justice. Baelkin was my ambassador. And if you don't consider him to be under your protection, I do consider him to be under mine. You must give his murderer to the sea, where she will find no forgiveness. Give us your seneschal, Jude Duarte. For a moment, I feel as though I can't breathe. It's as though I am drowning again. Cardan's eyebrows go up. His voice stays light.
But she's only just returned from the sea.
So you don't dispute her crime? Asks Orla.
Why should I?
Asks Cardan.
If she's the one with whom he dueled, I am certain she would win. My brother supposed himself expert with the sword. A great exaggeration of abilities. But she's mine to punish. Or not, as I see fit.
I hate hearing myself spoken of as though I am not right there, when I have his pledge of troth. But his queen killing an ambassador does seem like a worse political problem. Orla's gaze doesn't go to me. I doubt very much she cares about anything, but that Cardan gave up a lot for my return. And by threatening me, she believes she can get more. King of the land, I am not here to fight your sharp tongue. My blood is cold, and I prefer blades. Once, I considered you as a partner for my daughter. The most precious thing in the sea. She would have brokered a true peace between us. Cardan looks at Nikasia, and although Orla leaves him an opening, for a long moment, he does not speak. And when he does, he only says,
Like you, I am not skilled at forgiveness.
Something in Queen Orla's manner changes. If it's war you want, you would be unwise to declare it on an island. Around her, waves grow more violent, their white caps of froth larger. Whirlpools coalesce just off the edge of the land. Small ones, deepening, only to spin themselves out as new ones form.
War?
He peers at her as though she said something particularly puzzling, and it vexes him.
Do you mean for me to really believe you want to fight? Are you challenging me to a duel?
He's obviously baiting her, but I cannot imagine to what benefit. And if I was, she asks, what then, boy? The smile that curves his lip is voluptuous.
Beneath every bit of your sea is land. Seething, volcanic land. Go against me, and I will show you what this boy will do, my lady.
He stretches out his hand, and something seems to rise to the top of the water around us, like a pale scrum. Sand. Floating sand. Then, all around the court of the undersea, water begins to churn. I stare at him, hoping to catch his eye. But he is concentrating. Whatever magic he is doing. This is what Baefin meant when he said the High King was tied to the land. Was the beating heart and the star upon whom Elfheim's future was written. This is power. And to see Cardan wield it
is to understand just how inhuman he is, how transformed, how far outside my control he's moved. Stop! Orla shouts, as the churning turns to boiling. A stretch of ocean bubbles and seethes, as the folk of the undersea scream and scatter, swimming out of range. Several seals come up on the black rocks near the land, calling to one another in their language. Nikaze's shark is spun sideways, and she plunges into the water. Steam billows up from the waves, blowing hot. A huge white cloud rolls across my vision. When it clears, I can see that new earth is coalescing from the depths, hot stone cooling as we watch. With Nikasia kneeling on the growing isle, her expression half amazement and half terror. Cardin? She calls. One corner of his mouth is turned up in a little smile, but his gaze is unfocused. He believed that he needed to convince Orla that he wasn't feckless. Now I see he's come up with a plan to do that, just as he came up with a plan to throw off the yoke of my control. During my month in the undersea, he changed. He began scheming schemes, and he has become disturbingly effective at them. I am thinking of that as I watch grass grow between Nikasia's toes, and wildflowers spring up all along the gently rising hills, as I notice the trees and brambles sprout, and as the trunk of a tree begins to form around Nikasia's body. Cardin! She screams, as bark wraps around her, closing over her waist. What have you done? Orla cries, as the bark moves higher, as branches unfold, budding with leaves and fragrant blossoms. Petals blow out onto the waves.
Will you flood the land now?
Cardin asks Orla, with perfect calm, as though he didn't just cause a fourth island to rise from the sea.
Send salt water to corrupt the roots of our trees and make our streams and lakes brackish. Will you drown our berries and send your merfolk to slit our throats and steal our roses? Will you do it if it means your daughter will suffer the same? Come, I dare you.
Release Nikasia, says Orla, defeat heavy in her voice.
I am the High King of Elfheim,
Cardin reminds her,
and I mislike being given orders. You attacked the land. You stole my seneschal and freed my brother, who was imprisoned for the murder of our father Eldred, with whom you had an alliance. Once, we respected each other's territory. I have allowed you too much disrespect, and you have overplayed your hand. Now, Queen of the Undersea, we will have a truce, as you had with Eldred, as you had with Mab. We will have a truce, or we will have a war. And if we fight, I will be unsparing. Nothing and no one you love will be safe.
Orla pauses, and I suck in my breath, not at all sure what will come next. Very well, High King. Let us have an alliance. Give me my daughter, and we will go. I exhale. He was wise to push her, even though it was terrifying. After all, once she found out about Matic, she might press her advantage. Better to bring this moment to its crisis. And it worked. I looked down to hide my smile.
Let Nikasia stay here and be your ambassador in Baelkin's stead,
Cardin says. She has grown up on these islands, and many who love her are here. That wipes the smile off my face. On the new island, the bark is pulling away from Nikasia's skin. I wonder what he's playing at.
bringing her back to Elfheim. With her will inevitably come trouble. And yet, maybe it's the sort of trouble he wants.
If she wishes to stay, she may. Are you satisfied?
Orla asks. Cardan inclines his head.
I am. I will not be led by the sea, no matter how great its queen. As the High King, I must lead. But I must also be just.
Here he pauses, and then turns to me.
And today, I will dispense justice. Jude Duarte, do you deny you murdered Prince Bailkin, ambassador of the Undersea, and brother to the High King?
I am not sure what he wants me to say. Would it help to deny it? If so, surely he would not put it to me in such a way. A way that makes it clear he believes I did kill Bailkin. Cardan has had a plan all along. All I can do is trust that he has a plan now. I do not deny that we had a duel, and that I won it, I say, my voice coming out more uncertain than I'd like. All the eyes of the folk are on me, and for a moment, as I look out at their pitiless faces, I feel Maddox's absence keenly. Orla's smile is full of sharp teeth.
Hear my judgment,
Cardan says, authority ringing in his voice.
I exile Jude Duarte to the mortal world, until and unless she is pardoned by the crown. Let her not step one foot in Faerie, or forfeit her life.
I gasp. But you can't do that. He looks at me for a long moment, but his gaze is mild, as though he's expecting me to be fine with exile, as though I am nothing more than one of his petitioners, as though I am nothing at all.
Of course I can,
he replies.
But I am the Queen of Faerie, I shout.
And for a moment, there is silence. Then, everyone around me begins to laugh. I can feel my cheeks heat. Tears of frustration and fury prick my eyes as, a beat too late, Cardan laughs with them. At that moment, knights clap their hands on my wrists. Sir Rannoch pulls me down from the horse. For a mad moment, I consider fighting him, as though 24 knights aren't around us.
Deny it, then, I yell. Deny me!
He cannot, of course. So he does not. Our eyes meet, and the odd smile on his face is clearly meant for me. I remember what it was to hate him with the whole of my heart. But I've remembered too late.
Come with me, my lady,
Sir Rannoch says, and there is nothing I can do but go. Still, I cannot resist looking back. When I do, Cardan is taking the first step onto the new island. He looks every bit the ruler his father was, every bit the monster his brother wanted to become. Crow-black hair, blown back from his face, scarlet cape swirling around him, eyes reflecting the flat gray emptiness of the sky.
If Innsweel is the Isle of Woe, Innsmire the Isle of Might, and Innsmore the Isle of Stone,
he says, his voice carrying across the newly formed land,
then let this be Innsir, Isle of Ash.
Epilogue. I lie on the couch in front of the television. In front of me, a plate of microwaved fish sticks grows cold. On the screen, a cartoon ice skater is sulking. He's not a very good skater, I think. Or maybe he's a great skater. I keep forgetting to read the subtitles. It's hard to concentrate on pretty much anything these days. Vivi comes into the room and flops down on the couch.
Heather won't text me back, she says.
I turned up on Vivi's doorstep a week before, exhausted, my eyes red with weeping. Rannoch and his coterie had carried me across the sky on one of their horses and dumped me on a random street in a random town. I'd walked and walked until I had blisters on my feet, and I began to doubt my ability to navigate by the stars. Finally, I stumbled into a gas station with a taxi refueling and was startled to remember taxis existed. By then, I didn't care that I had no money with me, and that Vivi was probably going to pay him with a handful of glamoured leaves. But I didn't expect to arrive and find Heather gone. When she and Vivi came back from ferry, I guess she had a lot of questions, and then she'd had more questions. And finally, Vivi admitted to glamouring her. That's when everything totally unraveled. Vivi removed the glamour, and Heather got her memories back. Heather moved out. She's sleeping at her parents' house, so Vivi keeps hoping she might still come back. Some of her stuff is here. Clothes, her drafting table, a set of unused oil paints. She'll text you when she's ready, I say, although I am not sure I believe it. She's just trying to get her head straight. Just because I am bitter about romance doesn't mean everyone else needs to be. For a while, we just sit on the couch together, watching the cartoon skater fail to land jumps and fall in helpless and probably unrequited love with his coach. Soon, Oak will come home from school, and we will pretend that things are normal. I will take him into the wooded part of the apartment complex and drill him on the sword. He doesn't mind, but to him it's only messing around, and I don't have the heart to scare him into seeing swordplay differently. Vivi takes a fish stick off my plate and dredges it through the ketchup.
How long are you going to keep sulking? You were exhausted from being locked up in the undersea. You were off your game. He got one over on you. It happens.
Whatever, I say, as she eats my food.
If you hadn't gotten captured, you would have mopped the floor with him.
I'm not even sure what that means, but it's nice to hear. She turns to me with her cat eyes, eyes just like her father's.
I wanted you to come to the mortal world. Now you're here.
Maybe you'll love it. Give it a chance. I nod noncommittally.
Then if you don't love it,
she says, lifting an eyebrow,
you can always join Matic.
I can't, I say. He tried and tried to recruit me, but I kept turning him down. That ship sailed. She shrugs.
He wouldn't... Okay, he would care. He'd make you grovel a lot, and he'd bring it up awkwardly in war councils for the next couple of decades. But he'd take you.
I give her a stern look. And what? Work to put Oak on the throne? After everything we've done to keep him safe?
Work to hurt Cardin, Vivi says, with a fierce light in her eyes.
She has never been particularly forgiving.
Right now, I am glad of it.
How, I say, but the strategic part of my brain is grinding slowly back into action. Grimson is still in play. If he could make a crown for Baelkin, what could he do for me?
I don't know, but don't worry about it yet,
Vivi says, getting up.
Revenge is sweet, but ice cream is sweeter.
She goes to the freezer and removes a tub of mint chocolate chip. She brings that and two spoons back to the sofa.
For now, accept this delight, unworthy though it is, for the queen of fairy in exile.
I know she doesn't mean to mock me, but the title stings anyway. I pick up my spoon.
You must be strong enough to strike and strike and strike again without tiring.
the first lesson is to make yourself that strong. We eat, bathed in the flickering light of the screen. Vivi's phone is silent on the coffee table. My mind is whirling.
This has been a Hachette Audio production of The Wicked King. Written by Holly Black. Read by Caitlin Kelly. Produced by Christine M. Farrell. The Wicked King is also available in print and digital formats from Little Brown & Company, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2019 by Holly Black. Audio production copyright 2019 Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this book without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the book other than for review purposes, please contact permissions at hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.